This is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Okay, I think we're live now. Good morning. Welcome to the Red Pill Reports. Obviously, I'm not JD. I'm Sergeant Jim Ram, retired. You can call me Sarge. I'm sitting in for JD. He's taking some personal time, and we wish him all the best and hope he can get back soon. Anyway, this is Red Pill Reports. We'll be with you for the next 2 hours, and everything is A-OK at this point. We had a little bit of a snafu for the first few seconds of the call or show that we went to replay, and somehow or another, we managed to get things back to a live show. So we're going to continue on. Our website is redpillreports.com, and there's tons of information there, information about our guests, information about the current news. I suggest you check that out as much as possible, whenever you can. They keep it up to date. The support staff here, Robert and Jeff, do an awesome job of lining up guests and making sure that the information on the website is absolutely the best you could possibly get. And I'm running a little bit behind right now, obviously, because I'm still learning this system. We got quite a few people in the chat room already, and I welcome you all. Thanks for being here. And just hope everything goes well. I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to be able to keep an eye on things, like JD does. That guy is amazing the way he manages to get back and forth between the chat room and everything else that's going on. But I will do my best to try and muddle along here and keep things going. But, I wanted to get into some of the news issues that are going on today. Interesting thing. Blackwater trains some of the world's top terrorists. Imagine that. Here's the little word. President Bush gave the CIA permission to create a top-secret assassination unit to find and kill al-Qaeda operatives, the same people that we put in business in the first place. The program was kept from Congress for 7 years, and when Leon Panetta told legislators about it in 2009, he revealed that the CIA had hired a private security firm, Blackwater, to help run it. The move was historic, says Evan Wright, the two-time National Magazine award-winning journalist who wrote Generation Kill. It seems to have marked the first time the U.S. government outsourced a covert assassination service to private enterprise. And just sort of opened the door, and things seem to have just been marching right along. So that's one thing to take a look at, and you can find more about that in our news section. That was in Blacklisted News. Next one, here's another one that's really cool. This will blow you away, although it really isn't surprising. Pentagon mistakenly mails Canada anthrax. Isn't that special? Okay, let's look at this thing here. Defense officials admitted that the Pentagon didn't just send live anthrax spores to 28 facilities in the United States and to an army base in South Korea. The agency also sent them to 3 laboratories in Canada and previously to Australia. The Washington Free Beacon reported the live spores were sent to Australia by accident in 2008 and to Canada just recently. The anthrax shipments originated from an army lab in Dugway Proving Ground in Utah. Military officials believe the spores had been rendered inactive by scientists. Uh-huh. But there's more. We have concern that the inactivation procedures, when followed properly, are inadequate to kill all spores. said Daniel Sossin, the deputy director of the CDC's Office of Public Health Preparedness and Response to USA Today. He also assured that the U.S. government is developing an approach to secure such possible samples from misuse. So far, nobody's been reported to have been infected by the spores, but BBC News reported by four Americans and 22 military members stationed at South Korea's Osan base are receiving preventative treatment, though. In all, live anthrax spores have been sent by the Pentagon into three countries, 12 states in America, and the District of Columbia. You think they sent the ones right after 9/11? Good possibility. The question is, why are they sending anthrax spores anywhere? If I remember right, anthrax is considered to be a deadly weapon, a chemical weapon, and it's banned by the Geneva Convention and the rules of war and that kind of thing. So the question is, why do we have these things in the first place? I know that the official excuse is, well, we have to have this stuff in order to develop, vaccines and treatments and things in case an enemy uses it on us. But all reports are that the only people that have this stuff is us. And it always seems to be whenever these things are used anywhere, it's always traced back to like Fort Detrick, Maryland and places like that where it's not a naturally occurring version of the bacteria, but a weaponized version that was created by the United States military. And they just seem to keep getting out. So that's some crazy stuff going on there. And it's just one more thing where, when people have toys, they're going to play with them. And unfortunately, the big toys that these guys have are the kind that, when they play with them, people get hurt. And, it's just one more thing to let you know that, maybe the wrong people are running the shop now. The asylum is being run by the inmates and the crazy people are out there now messing with everybody. All right, moving on. ISIS sees 2,300 U.S. armored Humvees, possibly worth $1 billion. Mosul, Iraq, when ISIS fighters seized the city of Mosul in 2014, with the city came over 2,300 U.S. military armored Humvees that, according to Iraq's prime minister, Haider al-Abadi, and in an interview with the state-run Al-Iraqiya television, the prime minister admitted in the collapse of Mosul, we lost a lot of weapons. Yeah, basically, the Nouri al-Maliki, who was the prime minister at the time, basically told the military just to drop your stuff and run. So they left by order and purposely left that stuff there so that the ISIS people would be able to get a hold of it. And we lost 2,300 Humvees in Mosul alone. This issue is nothing new to Truth and Media. Months ago, in our Origins of ISIS report, we explained how thousands of armored military vehicles left by the U.S. military in Iraq had been seized by ISIS fighters. In that report, we explained one of the most important facts that the mainstream media ignores time and time again is that ISIS was able to grow so fast because of the U.S. military equipment they were able to seize, equipment that our military left in Iraq, but we left it there for the U.S. or for the Iraqi forces to use. And then when ISIS came in, Maliki basically said, okay, guys, don't fight, drop everything and leave. And that's exactly what they did. They followed their orders. They left because they didn't want to be involved in a fight since they weren't being paid anyway. And they basically left all this stuff behind, including truckloads of Humvees, tanks, and weaponry that instead of taking or destroying the U.S. government, simply decided to leave behind. On Monday, a Humvee was used in an ISIS suicide bombing on a military base north of Fallujah that killed 42, a military source told Al Jazeera. The value of the lost vehicles is unknown, but in December 2014, the U.S. State Department approved a possible sale of 1,000 Humvees armed with machine guns and grenade launchers to Iraq at an estimated cost of $579 million. Now, one of my other sources that I just happen to know, who is actually spending a lot of time on the ground in Iraq, gives a little bit more insight on this. And he basically says that all these vehicles are about ready to fall apart. The suspensions are shot on them. They haven't been maintained. So, you know, they might be good for a suicide bombing, but they aren't going to run much more after that, from what this guy tells me. Whether that's accurate and, as far as all of these vehicles is concerned is another question, but, his sources in the military are pretty good. And, that's just one more little bit of information that wasn't in the official article, but I just happened to have, so I thought I'd spread it on to you. Okay. Let's see where we're at now. I'm shifting around here because my news sources, like I said, I'm new at this, so I'm just kind of bouncing around and we'll just get what we get. Recovery 2015, the use of non-bank credit, e.g. payday loans, continues to soar. Family savings not where they should be. That's one of the problems. But Mills sees something else in the recovery that's more disturbing. The number of households tapping alternative financial services are on the rise, meaning that Americans are turning to non-bank lenders for credit. Payday loans, refund anticipation loans, pawn shops, and rent-to-own services. According to the Urban Institute report, the number of households that used alternative credit products increased 7% between 2011 and 2013. And the kind of household seeking alternative financing is changing too. It's an economic recovery so lopsided, corrupt, and fraudulent, only an oligarch could love it. Imagine that. One of the key themes at Liberty Blitzkrieg since inception has been to point out that the current economic recovery is largely a sham. You think? While there are certainly meaningful innovations happening in the less regulated and corrupt parts of the economy, such as technology sector, much of the landscape is riddled with waste, fraud, cronyism, and stagnation. So much so that I have gone ahead and characterized the entire post-crisis economic environment to be the oligarch recovery. Interesting. Nowhere is this more evident than within the many statistics demonstrating that things for a growing America underclass are getting worse, not better. Imagine that. We have everything. Prices are going sky high. If you're lucky, you still have a job. But many people are getting laid off. Many people are dealing with all kinds of issues, including, you know, the pay raises are not going along commensurate with the cost of living increases that we're seeing. So, yeah, of course, the people that are working two and three jobs just to make ends meet would really beg to differ when you have these bozos come on TV and talk about how the economy is improving and we're on the way out of it and everything's going to be just fine. I don't think they would agree. Excuse me, I had to clear my throat there. let's try this again. I got to clear my throat again, sorry. Don't know why. Most of the time my throat's just fine, but when I get on these shows, all of a sudden everything gets plugged up. But we'll make do. Okay, nowhere is this more evident than within the many statistics demonstrating that things for the growing American underclass are getting worse, not better. Most frightening finding in the Federal Reserve's report on the economic well-being of U.S. households of 2014 concerns a matter of $400. $400, 2020s, four Benjamins, or just enough to crush half of all American households. 47% of all respondents say that they could either not cover an emergency expense costing $400 or would cover it by selling something or borrowing money, reads this year's annual report. So in other words, what they're saying is if something comes along that costs $400, it would be outside of the ability of the average American household to be able to deal with that just by writing a check, you know, one that would not bounce. They have to sell things. They have to go into deeper debt trying to make that happen. And I fully understand that. It wasn't long ago I was in that position. And thank goodness I've found something that helps me not be in that position now. But for the grace of God, you know, that's where we're at. Let's see here. 47%. of the respondents say they could either cover emergency expense or would they have to sell something or borrow money. Family savings, not where it should be. That's one of the problems. And they can't save when the cost of living is taking everything they have just to make ends meet. So, you know, where's the response? Government just keeps on spending more money. They keep tapping into private pensions, taking things away from the people that are retired on and have nothing else to go by. It's a scary proposition that we're in right now because things are just there's no signs of things getting better. And in this article, they actually show it's a graph with more households are using non-bank credit. Shows the 2011 numbers and the 2013 numbers, and it's not a pretty picture. And despite what the lamestream media tells you, there's really no good end in sight. Things are going to get worse and worse. So you got to look at Plan B and Plan C, and it's a sad situation. But that's what happens when we sit back and watch the games and not worry about what's being done to us. On the little bit more, Baltimore still in the news. Baltimore has descended into a state of lawlessness, and more cities will soon follow. Imagine that. And this is a programmed response, in my opinion, or programmed situation. Did you really think that Baltimore would return to normal after everything that has happened? On Thursday, a mother and her 7-year-old son were both shot in the head in a double murder that has shocked the entire nation. Police believe that the son may have been shot in order to prevent him from identifying the individual that shot his mother. So is this what America is turning to? A place where 7-year-old kids are executed in cold blood. That mother and son were the 37th and 38th murder victims in the city of Baltimore so far this month. That is just unbelievable. That makes this the deadliest month in Baltimore in 15 years. But because of all the controversy surrounding the death of Freddie Gray, police in Baltimore are afraid to do their jobs at this point. In some areas of the city, young men boldly smoke weed in public and wave guns around at innocent bystanders without any worry that police will intervene. Baltimore has descended into a state of lawlessness, and this is just the beginning. Have you ever been afraid to step out of your own home? That is what day-to-day life is like for many residents of Baltimore right now. In fact, one woman is even barricading her door and setting up metal slabs behind her windows to deflect gunfire. Just check out the following excerpt from a recent news report about what is going on in the city. "I'm afraid to go out," said Antoinette Perrine, whose brother was shot down 3 weeks ago on a basketball court near her home in the Harlem Park neighborhood of West Baltimore. Ever since, she has barricaded her door and added metal slabs inside her windows to deflect gunfire. "It's so bad, people are afraid to let their kids go outside," Perrine said. "People wake up with shots through their windows. Police used to sit on every corner on the top of the block. These days, they're nowhere." I think that this is an indication of what we can expect from police when chaos erupts in cities all over America. In some places, there will be troops in the streets to maintain order, but in other areas, it will be like the Wild Wild West. And that's, you know, I'm going to comment on some of this. Being a retired police officer, you may or may not know that, but I spent 15 years, 16 years in law enforcement in Central Ohio, and I took an early retirement in 1996 because I was one of the few guys on my department who actually had read the Constitution and understood what my oath of office was. And every single call you get sent on, you're either going to violate your oath of office or somebody's rights, or both. And this, in my opinion, is a situation where the training of these officers has a lot to do with what's going on. They're trained to be of the mentality, it's us against them, and you're the head man out there. When you're on the street, you're in control and all this kind of stuff. And a lot of guys get badge heavy, and the selection process is another issue. It used to take a lot of people who had prior military experience, former MPs and that kind of stuff, who kind of had an idea what the job was all about. Now they're looking more, it seems, towards people who are, A, just willing to follow orders, do as they're told. They're basically, they come out of a improper government schooling system that never teaches anything about the Constitution, individual rights, and that kind of stuff. And they're looking for the bully mentality, it seems. And they're getting a lot of those kind of people. Now, I'm not saying all police officers are like that. I knew some really good guys on my department, but unfortunately, that was then, this is now, and there's a major change in things that's going on. The mentality is different, the education is different, and once they actually get out there, because they have developed this us against them mentality, and it seems to be on both sides of the aisle now, it really sets up a situation that they're, you know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're going to have clashes like this, and there's not going to be any way to avoid it. And because of that, you've got a situation now where police are afraid to do their jobs, you know, even the good ones, because, you know, as they say on this, I'm going to go a little bit further here, criminals have the upper hand in Baltimore now, and they know it. They just consider the words of the head of the police union that says the police in the city are under siege. The criminals are taking advantage of the situation in Baltimore since the unrest, said Gene Ryan, president of the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 3. Criminals feel empowered now. There is no respect. Police are under siege in every quarter. They are more afraid of going to jail for doing their jobs properly than they are of getting shot on duty. And that's a scary situation when everything's being videotaped, and I'm not saying that that's not a bad thing. If somebody gets out of hand, it's good to have somebody there to document it. But at the same time, that does create in the minds of the police, they're just scared to do anything. It's better to just stay in the cruiser a long way from the situation rather than take a chance on going in to do your job and accidentally do something wrong and have it spread all over the 6 o'clock news and, you know, who knows where else from there. I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying that that's, you know, what you can expect. And again, I firmly believe that this has been developed this way on purpose. When you have this kind of stuff going on in the general public, there's so much unrest and they, you know, whether it's black on white, you know, doesn't make any difference, but they do everything they can to keep us fighting amongst ourselves so that we don't know what's being done to us or don't see what's being done to us in the halls of Congress, the local legislatures and city councils and that kind of stuff. And that's what this is all about. It's basically divide and conquer. As long as we aren't watching what they're doing, they can get away with all the stuff that's going on, and it just keeps going and going and going. So anyway, imagine moving, imagine what must be going through the heads of Baltimore police officers at this point. One wrong move and you could start a riot. And looks like we're running out of this first half hour already, so stick with us through this next 3-minute break, and we'll continue this on the other side.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled in favor of a Muslim woman in a religious discrimination case. We get the details from SRN's Greg Cluxton.
Justices on the High Court have sided with a Muslim woman who did not get hired after she showed up to a job interview wearing a headscarf. She was applying for work at clothing retailer Abercrombie & Fitch. The court said that employers generally have to accommodate job applicants and employees with religious needs if the employer at least has an idea that such accommodation is necessary. Greg Clugston, SRN News, Washington.
Dozens of farmers in the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta are changing their business models to meet voluntary water conservation targets amid the relentless drought that's still going on in California. The state's Delta Watermaster says roughly 120 farmers in the Delta had filed their water-saving plans ahead of a midnight deadline. He expects more plans to come in. This is SRN News. Some earthquakes off the coast of Oregon. It's not all that rare, according to the Geographic Association in Golden, Colorado. They say that as a result of that, nothing has been felt on land, and there's no threat of any kind of tsunami.
This is definitely a known seismic area, and we've definitely seen earthquakes in this area before.
That is geophysicist Amy Vaughn with the National U.S. Geological Survey in Golden, Colorado. Secretary of State Kerry tried to get back on his feet, but he'll undergo surgery today to deal with his broken leg that he suffered over the weekend. In the meantime, he will continue to contribute to international matters. State Department spokeswoman Marie Harf.
Secretary is committed to pursuing an aggressive recovery schedule. There are a range of possible recovery trajectories with an injury like this, and it's quite frankly premature to speculate on the specifics of what that recovery will look like.
And Marie Harf says that Kerry continues, will continue, to be fully engaged in the Iran nuclear talks as well. More details at srnnews.com.
Phoenix Rising Radio with Phoenix, Monday through Thursday on Truth Frequency Radio.
And we are back. This is Red Pill Reports. I'm Sergeant Jim Ram, retired, sitting in for J.D. And once again, I want to thank J.D. for allowing me to be here today, as well as Robert and Jeff. I don't take it lightly that you guys have put your trust in me. I'm not sure if it was a smart thing to do, but be that as it may, we're here and we'll do the best we can. We got a bunch of guys in the chat room, and again, sorry if I'm not doing a good job at keeping up with what's going on in there. I'm still, you know, I'm still learning how all this stuff works, and I'm scrolling back and forth, and honestly, my computer screen isn't big enough to keep everything in plain view. I think I'd need a 60-inch one for that, but basically, we were situation in Baltimore and how it's probably going to spread nationwide if things continue the way they are. Let's see, as we were talking before, can you imagine what must be going through the heads of Baltimore police officers at this point? One wrong move and you could start a riot. One wrong move and you could go to prison. One wrong move and you could be in front on the front page of every newspaper in the country and be labeled the biggest villain in America. In early April, I publicly stated, and that's the writer of this article, I publicly stated that civil unrest was coming to Baltimore and that we are seeing, what we are seeing happen there is eventually going to start happening all over the nation. Police are going to start pulling back from the most violent areas and will allow chaos to reign in the streets. It is only human nature. Police officers are going to be extremely hesitant to risk their lives in communities where they are deeply hated and where they run the risk of ruining their entire lives with a single wrong move. It is going to take a lot of courage to be a cop in America's inner cities in the years ahead. I don't deny that for a second. And I don't see any end in sight, unfortunately. The other thing is, you may have remembered when I mentioned earlier in the article, if I can scroll back up here and see where I found it. Basically, they were alluding to the fact that in some places, there we go, In some places, there will be troops in the streets to maintain order, but in other areas, it'll be like the Wild West. That is exactly what they're looking for. They're waiting for the people to get so bad that they can use the excuse of calling out the military or the National Guard to maintain order, to suppress insurrection, so to speak. And, you know, in some cases, that may actually fall within constitutional bounds. Scary thought, but you know, it's not a good idea to use military, and it's actually illegal in most cases to use military on the streets of America. And they are not equipped for that. You know, the job of the military is to kill people and break things. And when you take people that are trained to do that and put them in a civilian law enforcement position, it's a bad mix because they are not qualified to do that and it's not in their mindset and, you know, they're trained otherwise. You know, when they're in a situation in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever it might be, when someone's shooting at them, they are going to respond with, you know, superior firepower and, basically the old peace through superior firepower is the way it's going to be. And that's the way they're going to respond here. And it's not a good idea. It's a recipe for disaster. And unfortunately, I think the people that are running all of this, that's exactly what they've got in mind. So, you know, let's all just, you know, if you're the praying type, now's a better time to start doing that. That's for sure. It's going, you know, like I said, it's going to increase or take a lot of courage to be a cop in America's inner cities in the years ahead. Last year, the number of officers feloniously killed in the line of duty increased by 89%. And things are only going to get worse. America is changing and not for the better. Yeah, that's the change that Barack Obama promised us. People thought he was joking, but he just wanted to fundamentally change the face of America. And he mentioned that and we fell for it. Well, I didn't, but a lot of people did. Well, actually, I don't even know about that because I think he was put there not by the voters of America. He was put there by people in charge of things on the top. And that's just my opinion, but, it's not one that I share all by myself. And on top of that, he has no business being there because he's not an American citizen, naturally born. And, in my opinion, we don't have a president sitting in this country. We have a felonious usurper who needs to not be, impeached. He needs to be deported simply and finally. Anyway. So where are we? If you're inspecting the government to help to step in and fix things when that happens, you'll be deeply disappointed because our cities' streets are turning into war zones. The nation is filled with anger and hate, and it's getting worse and with each passing day. Truly wish that things had not turned out this way, but they did. I truly wish that we would just learn to love one another, get along, live in peace, but that isn't happening. The hatred and frustration that are boiling just under the surface in this country are about to explode. And when that happens, we will all pay a very great price. You know, that is a little bit of a doomsday attitude, so to speak. And I'm familiar. Michael Snyder is the author of this article, and he's been around for a long, long time. I've got several articles that he wrote years ago. One was called A Nation of Cowards Dealing with Gun Control. Excellent, excellent article. But, you know, this is a little on the downer side of things, I guess. There are a lot of good people left in this country. The question is whether or not the good will outweigh the evil. And that's basically what we're dealing with, good against evil. And when the big problem is evil is running the show because that's what you have in Washington DC for the most part. And, it's sad when we get to that place. But we're going to move on here because we do have a guest coming up in the second hour. And I think you guys are going to really enjoy her. Gwen Olson is a former drug rep. And I'm not going to spill all the beans, but basically, if you can manage to put up with me for the next 23 minutes until we get to the second hour, it'll be worth your wait because this lady has a major story to tell that I think you're going to be interested in. So, and that's one of the reasons they asked me to do this show today is because my show, Your DIY Health, which is every Thursday, from 9 to 11 Eastern, excuse me, is all about health. And, when I found out who I was going to be interviewing, I said, okay, I'll do it. And that's why I'm here. You know, otherwise I'd be scared to death. And I kind of am anyway. But let's see. Let's see what we got here. Patriot Act, spy provisions officially expire. Woohoo! Yeah, buddy. Let's see if we can get all of it to expire. This is an interesting thing here. Senate civil libertarians led by Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky successfully blocked Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's attempt to reauthorize the USA Patriot Act's controversial bulk spying provision before its May 31st expiration date. Now that the spying authority has expired, the Senate will consider the USA Freedom Act. I just love these names. They are totally 180 degrees opposite what they claim to be in their title. It's anything but freedom this week. You know, it's freedom for the government to spy on you more and cause more tyranny to come into your life. It doesn't give you any more freedom. Anyway, they're going to consider that bill this week, a bill which Congressman Justin Amash says will compel corporations to spy on Americans on the government's behalf instead. And if you don't think that's not already happening, you got some education to get going here. When the CEO of Google, Eric Schmidt, says he wants Google to be like the mind of God, which was an official statement he made several years ago, every time you use Google, which I highly avoid, anything that goes through their servers is maintained forever, including emails that use a Gmail address. If you send somebody, if you have a Gmail address or someone sends you a message from another one into your account or whatever the case might be, that message is archived forever in Google servers. And they use that stuff all the time, supposedly for innocuous marketing reasons, but they do all kinds of stuff with that thing. They claim that they can predict the outbreaks of flu around the country before the CDC can, simply by people Googling remedies for things and the best pricing on cough and cold medication and all that kind of junk. Their analog or their algorithms they have set up for those computers look at all that data and basically say, okay, we're going to have a flu outbreak next week in Kansas City, Missouri. And lo and behold, it happens because the people start looking at that stuff, you know, beforehand, and it just sort of clicks in. So they're using the data and they are watching it. And that's just one instance. I mean, there are others out there doing the same kind of thing, but Google is the big bad voodoo daddy, I guess you could say. And I highly recommend things like StartPage as an alternative search engine that doesn't maintain any records on your searches. And there are others out there, but StartPage is a great one that I use all the time, and I love it. Anyway, after the USA Patriot Act Section 215 provision authorizing the bulk collection of millions of Americans' phone records by the National Security Agency was ruled illegal, imagine that, by the Federal Appeals Court, Senator Rand Paul, Republican Kentucky, launched an aggressive campaign to force the Senate to allow the provision to expire. The law's spying authority had been designed to sunset on May 31st, absent reauthorization by lawmakers. And imagine this, you know, supposedly the Senate Majority Leader, Republican Mitch McConnell, who's supposed to be on the side of the people, according to the Republican platform, and he's basically just going along with the mainstream group. He attempted to pass several bills that would temporarily extend the law's expiring spying authorities, but was blocked by Rand Paul first through a perfectly timed filibuster and then through additional procedural stalling tactics that pushed the timing of the vote past May 22nd when senators were set to leave Washington, D.C. for recess. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell scheduled a last-minute vote on May 31st in an effort to reauthorize the provisions prior to their expiration, but Senator Rand Paul objected to any votes on Patriot Act reauthorization bills or the USA Freedom Act, a House-passed bill that Congressman Justin Amash, Republican Michigan, said would outsource NSA spying to corporations. Until the Senate had sufficient time to debate, thus tabling the votes until Tuesday of this week, which would be today, at the earliest, forcing the Patriot Act to officially expire as of 12:01 Eastern Time on the 1st, which was yesterday. Tonight we stopped the illegal NSA bulk data collection, which would have been, you know, actually Sunday night. This is a victory no matter how you look at it. It might be short-lived, but I hope it provided a road for a robust debate which will strengthen our intelligence community while also respecting our Constitution, said Senator Rand Paul of his bipartisan campaign to promote or protect America's privacy, which enjoyed substantial support by allies like Senator Ron Wyden of Democrat of Oregon and Congressman Jess Namish, Republican Michigan, and Thomas Massie, Republican of Kentucky. Said Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, we shouldn't be disarming unilaterally as our enemies grow more sophisticated and aggressive. Just who does he think our enemies are? That's the thing that gets me, is they constantly say this is to fight terrorism. They have created all of the terrorists that we are supposedly dealing with. So they got to have a boogeyman that they can keep holding up. That's exactly what they did with Osama bin Laden. I mean, they held him up for years after he was dead. He died in like 2001 or 2002, and they kept him on ice until a perfect time to roll him out and claim that the SEALs had gone in and taken him out and all this junk, and which was a total fabrication that still most people tend to believe, unfortunately. But this is exactly what's going on. We created ISIS. We created Al-Qaeda. You know, we created all those things. It's called controlled opposition. And that gives us something to fight, so we've always got something out there to hold up as we have to, you know, further infringe on your rights in order to protect you. And that is just total baloney. And basically, that's the situation we're in right now because we have allowed these people to do this stuff. And it's sad. It's very, very sad. So anyway, where was I? According to, I stopped right in the middle of this paragraph. So I'm going to go back. We shouldn't be disarming unilaterally as our enemies grow more sophisticated and aggressive, and we certainly should not be doing so based on a campaign of demagoguery and disinformation launched in the wake of the unlawful actions of Edward Snowden. I still think Edward Snowden's a hero. There comes a time when, you know, releasing information has to be done to show the overall corruption and criminal activities and criminal nature of your government. There is nothing in government that should be done behind closed doors. You know, when they do that, it just sets up the standard for why is it that they have to be so secret. They scream and complain of national security all the time. You know, very seldom, you know, maybe 0.1% of the time they use the national security argument, is it really justified. The rest of the time it's just to cover up their illegal acts so that you don't know what they're doing. And that's what Snowden uncovered. Anyway, according to NBC News, the three expiring provisions of the Patriot Act include the National Security Agency's authority to collect Americans' phone records in bulk, a lone wolf provision allowing officials to investigate individuals who lack connections to terror groups, and a roving wiretap authority allowing investigators to spy on different communications tools believed to be used by suspect without obtaining a new warrant each time. All we got to do is read Article 1, Section, or you know, Article 4 of the Constitution, and the Bill, or not Article of the Constitution, but the Article 4 of the Bill of Rights. And explain to me how any of these things are lawful. If you want to do that, you've got to go back and amend the Constitution. And literally, you can't even do that because the Bill of Rights is strictly something that spells out rights that we got from God. And it's an acknowledgement, not a granting. And that's the thing here. We have these rights regardless of whether they're written down on paper or not. And no law passed by Congress can violate them, but they do on a daily basis. So all of this stuff, the entire Patriot Act is unconstitutional. And that's something that nobody seems to be talking about. You know, I wish Rand Paul would get up and hold up the Constitution and say, show me in this Constitution anything that authorizes anything we've done in the last 50 years. Because most of the stuff that Congress does is 100% unconstitutional. Okay, we're running out of time, so I'm going to go on. But anyway, that information, that article is in the news feed, and check it out if you want to hear more about it. And Ron Paul is, you know, speaking out again. Is CIA providing security or threatening our liberty? That's another one that's very interesting. And I'm just going to hit the title and move on. Let's move into something a little more fun. Woman tosses old Apple computer, doesn't realize it's worth $200,000. That's a trip. And there's a picture of it here. This is News Strange. Basically, a woman, moral of the story, be careful what you throw away. Better watch what you throw away. A woman in California dropped off an old Apple computer at a recycling center without realizing it was worth $200,000. What she tossed in the trash turned out to be a vintage Apple I computer, one of about 200 first-generation desktop models assembled by Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and Ron Wayne in 1976. Naturally, it's a valuable collector's item. The good news? The recycling center wants to find the woman and give her 50% of the profit. The bad news? They have no idea who the donor is or where she lives. Clean Bay Area Vice President Victor Gishin told the San Jose Mercury News that the woman showed up with boxes of computer parts she cleaned out of her garage shortly after her husband died. She said, "I want to get rid of this stuff and clean up my garage," Gishin told the newspaper. I said, "Do you need a tax receipt?" She said, "No, I don't need anything." She left the store without leaving behind any form of documentation. In fairness, you can't really blame her for thinking it was worthless at first glance. And there's a picture there of what an original Apple I looks like. And it's basically a briefcase that you lift up, and you have a keyboard and a cassette tape recorder. And in the lid of the briefcase is the motherboard, so to speak, that is very primitive by today's standards. And that hooked up to just a TV set for a monitor. So, yeah, it was, you know, the really nice ones were pretty cool. They were built into a wood frame and all kinds of stuff, but the basic ones were just a briefcase that they had modified. Doesn't exactly scream $200,000, right? Since the company had a backup of donations, it wasn't until a while later that the staff made the discovery. Since it's company policy to split proceeds 50-50 with the donor, they want to track her down, but there's only one way they can verify the woman's identity without documentation. "I remember her," Gitchin said. "To prove who she is, I just need to look at her." And that's a key. You know, I've got an Apple IIe that I bought in 1982, and the thing still works. My mom's Christmas card records are on it. And that's the funny thing. The old systems, you know, still run, still work, and the biggest problem now is finding ribbons for the Epson inkjet or dot matrix printer that it uses. But yeah, apples are some valuable things. Now mine doesn't have anywhere near that kind of value because the 2Es were major production items. I mean, there were millions of them made as opposed to, you know, a couple of hundred of the Apple Ones, the originals. But yeah, be careful what you throw out. You never know. There might be some real value there that you're going to miss out on. And another thing that's rather interesting, tomorrow is the, let's see, I think the 50th anniversary, if I do my math right, 2015 minus 1965, and I'm still not getting it, I'm not punching, but I think it's tomorrow is, anyway, the 50th anniversary of the first U.S. spacewalk. Astronaut Ed White became the first American to walk in space on June 3rd, 1965. He flew on the Gemini 4 mission with astronaut Jim McDivitt. And I'm actually old enough to remember that. I was just short of 8 years old when that took place. And there's a pretty cool video on this link. And I'll see if I can put it in the chat room real quick just for the fun of it. Let's see here. Here we go. Hey, look at that. Bingo. So anyway, have fun, guys. Take a look at that when you get a chance. It's rather interesting. And, again, I'm sorry that I'm not able to watch the chat room much, but, I just wanted to let you know that that's in there, and it's pretty interesting stuff. And we've got a few more minutes left, so I want to cover one last thing, hopefully maybe two. Obamacare. Everybody talks about that on a regular basis, and this is one from FreedomWorks blog. Don't fix Obamacare, end it. I couldn't agree more. It's an unconstitutional piece of garbage legislation. Government has absolutely no right to mandate that you buy health insurance any more than they have any right to mandate that you buy a pink Yugo or a certain brand of cigarettes or a left-handed screwdriver or any other thing. That's insane. So anyway, Congress is rapidly reaching a crossroads on Obamacare. When the Supreme Court rules in a couple of weeks, there is a decent chance, hopefully it'd be a whole lot better if we had some people with brains on wearing those black robes, that the IRS's insurance subsidies in 34 states will be officially ruled illegal and cease to operate. If that happens, politicians on both sides of the aisle are going to need to figure out what to do, because we will then be in a situation where Obamacare is mandating that people buy insurance that they absolutely cannot afford. So what to do? You know, like I said, the first thing would be to repeal the stupid thing. But you can bet they're probably not going to do that, because when's the last time you remembered government admitting that they screwed up, that they did something wrong, and we're going to fix it by giving you back your rights? I don't think so. First option is to do nothing. Although Congress is generally good at doing nothing, political pressure would make such a course of action all but suicidal. In any case, this would lead to states setting up their own insurance exchanges to recapture the subsidies, a path that is fraught with peril, as we have seen. Option two is for Congress to simply open up the Affordable Care Act and insert new language to fix the offending passage. This would require minimal effort on the legislature's part, and there will likely be substantial pressure from the administration. Of course, the administration wants to salvage this albatross any way it can. It's going to be a temptation that is hard to resist for many, but in fact, it's one of the worst choices Congress would make, and here's why. First, Obamacare is a terrible law, as I've already said. That is destroying the American healthcare system, and it was bad enough already. It cannot be fixed because it is fundamentally flawed in the assumption that it mandates the government bureaucracy, that its assumption that mandates and government bureaucracy can manage an incredibly complex system covering over 300 million people. The section of law under debate was not a drafting error. It was an intentional feature designed to coerce states into setting up their own health insurance exchanges. Any attempt to put a patch onto the law will merely prolong the pain Obamacare is causing to millions of Americans. A second reason for Congress not to do the easy thing is the precedent would set for future administrations. The IRS interpreted the law in its implementation of subsidies directly contrary to its written text. So in other words, they did exactly the opposite of what the law told them to do. If Congress responds to this lawlessness by codifying the interpretation into law, it sends a signal to regulatory agencies that they can do anything they want, which is what they think anyway. And that rather than hold them accountable for their misconduct, Congress will simply bail them out legislatively. It's a classic case of perverse incentives where Congress would basically give them the right to regulatory abuse for years to come. So that's it. Stick to this for the next 3 minutes, and when we come back, we will have Gwen Olson with us.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any
computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. The Senate now set to decide the fate of a House bill backed by the President that would end the National Security Agency's collection of American calling records while preserving other surveillance authorities. GOP Congressman Bob Goodlatte tells the Salem Radio Network he does hope the Senate will approve the USA Freedom Act, which he calls an important piece of legislation for the country.
Which not only enhances civil liberty protection, but also enhances national security by making several key changes to the law that don't affect American civil liberties, but do give intelligence organizations and the FBI ways to track suspected foreign terrorists that they don't have now.
Goodlatte is chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. U.S. factory orders tumbled in April. It's a sign that manufacturers are struggling amid a stronger dollar and cheaper oil, as Kent Lorman explains.
The Commerce Department says orders fell 0.4% in April, marking the eighth decline in 9 months. The key category that tracks business investment plans, non-military capital goods, excluding aircraft, slipped 0.3%. Orders for electronic products plunged 4%, while demand in the volatile aircraft category tailed off sharply.
That's SRN's Ken Lorman reporting. President Obama's effort to curb the use of antibiotics in meat is actually starting with his own employees, as such meat will not be used in federal cafeterias. Centers for Disease Control Director Dr. Tom Frieden says the overuse of antibiotics could rob America of a key weapon in the war against all kinds of diseases.
We don't want the miracle to be over, the miracle of antibiotics. And unless we take action now, that is a significant risk.
More than 150 food companies, retailers, hospitals, and drug companies will highlight their commitments to slow the spread of antibiotic-resistant bacteria at a White House forum today. At Wall Street, the Dow struggling. It's down 23 points. This is SRN News.
Wherever you are, make it TT.
Radio.
Okay, and we are back with hour number two of the Red Pill Report. I'm Sergeant Jim Ram, retired. You can call me Sarge. I'll be sitting in for JD today. And you've made it through the first hour, put up with the pain of having to deal with me. And the second hour, you're in for a treat. We have got a guest with us today that is just going to be, I think you're going to find very interesting. And before I bring her on, I do again want to thank JD and Jeff and Robert for having the faith to have me sit in while JD's doing his thing. And I just, again, I don't take it lightly, and I hope I've done a halfway decent job, and we'll just go on and do the best we can. But our guest today is Gwen Olson. She's the author of the award-winning book, Confessions of an RX Drug Pusher. She's also a contributing author to three books, Drugging Our Children by Dr. Sharna Olfman et al. And Doctor of the Future by Dan Yachter, D.C. and the Maximized Living Makeover Manual by Dr. Ben Lerner et al. Gwen has also published health-related articles in Wellbeing Journal, Natural News, and the Health News Digest. She is a very active mental health activist and a 15-year veteran pharmaceutical rep from 1985 to 2000. Gwen worked for McNeil Pharmaceutical, Syntex Labs, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Abbott Labs, and Forest Laboratories. She was a hospital rep and a specialist rep for the majority of her career, educating residents in hospitals, teaching settings, and selling prescription drugs to doctors and obstetrics and gynecology, orthopedics, cardiology, neurology, endocrinology, and psychiatry. Gwen has a unique industry insider's perspective of the current healthcare dilemma in the United States and utilizes both her experience and the insights she received in her extensive sales training with pharma to illustrate or illuminate the marketing trends and illustrate how current greed and conflicts of interest make the system itself the biggest health risk to American consumers. I have to agree with that completely. For the past 5 years, Gwen has made hundreds of appearances and presentations and has been interviewed and featured on national and international television, radio, online, and print media documentary films, all culminating in today's interview here on Red Pill Reports. So once again, I just, without any further ado, I would like to welcome Gwen Olson to our stage. Gwen, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Jim. It's a pleasure.
Now tell me, you have quite an extensive background, but I'm interested in hearing exactly how you came to be where you are today. Why don't you give us just a quick rundown? I'm just going to let you go with it, and I'll punch in with questions if I have any. But go ahead and just tell us how you got to where you are.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned in my background, I did work in the pharmaceutical industry from 1985 until the year 2000 for several of the large manufacturers that you mentioned. And I came from no scientific background whatsoever. In fact, I was a language arts major and did my postgraduate work in journalism. So I really didn't have any kind of science background and was working for the Medicaid program in the state of Texas as a liaison and a rep for Medicaid. And I used to run into various pharmaceutical reps and their district managers as I was calling on doctor's offices. And that was my entry into the pharmaceutical industry because I was able to access physicians when I was going in to educate them that apparently pharmaceutical reps couldn't get in to see. And that impressed a district manager, and he invited me to interview for a position, and the rest is history. So it wasn't like I set out to ever become a pharmaceutical rep. I kind of fell into the position and then later realized that I was in fact a Trojan horse that had been placed within the industry to gather a fair amount of information and be able to disseminate that information to the public once I left. So it was very difficult in the beginning for me. I didn't have, as I said, that scientific background. So all of the information that I was given was coming from marketing and education, and I had to rely solely on that their honesty with me and their educational process to be able to go out and talk to doctors. But over time, I began to do a self-educating process where I was doing my own research and due diligence and subscribing to medical journals and whatnot, and started to realize that there were some huge disinformation and misinformation campaigns that were taking place, and that I, being on the front lines in particular, was, you know, spreading misinformation and minimizing side effects to physicians and things that were actually necessary information for them to make good clinical decisions and for also for them to get informed consent from the patients. Mm-hmm. So that started to distress me. And then I had my own personal incident of adverse reactions to antidepressants and anxiolytic drugs, which got me labeled, and I went on my own personal healing path, and while I was trying to find alternatives to the drugs that had actually caused the damage, I got into the natural foods industry and supplements and vitamins and things of that nature and developed an interest and started doing research in that. So when I left the industry in 2000, I kind of left with my tail between my legs. I was very unhealthy. I had no intention of becoming a whistleblower or sharing any of my experience with anyone because I had, like most pharmaceutical reps, had signed non-disclosure agreements where I was not allowed to talk about any of the inside privy information that I had, you know, acquired. And so I kind of left and decided that that was the end of it. But it wasn't the end of it, obviously, because in the year 2004, my niece, who was attending Indiana University and was a pre-med student, was in a car accident, and she was prescribed Vicodin, which is a hydrocodone, an opioid derivative, and she became addicted to the drug, and as she took more and more of the product, it made her more sedated, and she had difficulty studying, so one night when she was supposed to be pulling an all-nighter for exam, she went to a local health food store and she purchased a stimulant, Ephedra. And she took this concomitantly with her drugs, and she had an adverse drug reaction, which made her manic psychotic, and she ended up in a local hospital. And rather than identifying that she was having a drug reaction, they labeled her as bipolar, which is quite frequent these days, and she started getting another, you know, cocktail of antipsychotics, antidepressants, mood stabilizers, and things of that nature that continued to interact with the toxicity that she was having in her system, because these things are synergistic in nature and they just do an add-on effect.
Right.
And so that kind of put her on the road to becoming a mental patient. And while she was trying to withdraw from all of these drugs that she had been placed on, she became extremely severely depressed and she committed suicide. And she did so, first she tried to hang herself because she took her shoelaces and she tied them together and she attached them to the ceiling fan in the living room and she tried to hang herself, but her weight from her body weight pulled the ceiling fan out. So she was desperate and went into her sister's bedroom and poured an angel-shaped oil lantern contents over herself, and then she ignited it and she burned herself alive.
Oh my goodness.
So at that point in time, I knew I had nowhere to go but out with the information that I had, you know, discovered and that I had been privy to, because I knew that I had a moral obligation to share with other families and other people what had happened to me, my personal perspective, what had happened to my niece, and to pretty much bring that situation to the forefront so that it could be discussed openly and addressed. And I have since then testified before the psychopharmacology subcommittee for the FDA. I was at the meeting where they actually ended up giving an extended black box warning for antidepressants, that people aged 18 to 24 were also susceptible to suicidal and homicidal ideation. And so I was participant in that. I've also done a considerable amount of testifying before Congress and lobbying efforts to try to get information in front of our, you know, our legal departments and people that actually could use this information in a positive way so that they can help other people who've been affected by this problem. So this was what I did, and that was kind of the impetus for how I wrote my book, because when my niece committed suicide, I had been researching some of the blockbuster drugs that had been taken off the market, like Vioxx, and I decided that I wanted, in that research, I had gotten into the rabbit hole a little bit deeper, and I knew then that I had, you know, the ability to share information with my family members and friends as to exactly what had happened to my niece. I didn't want people thinking that she, you know, had a defective brain or that she was mentally ill, when I in fact recognized that she had had an adverse drug reaction and that this was something that had appeared in all of the clinical trials, that the manufacturers of these drugs were well aware of the suicidal and homicidal ideation taking place in the clinical trials, but that this information had been suppressed and not shared with either the providers of healthcare or the general public. And so I was, you know, basically trying to share that information with my family, and what was initially an email turned into a chapter and then turned into a book.
Wow. That's quite a story. Yeah, I find it interesting that, you know, I put a lot of this on the FDA because they are supposed to be the watchdog working on our behalf. And it turns out that they're really just a lapdog for Big Pharma. Vioxx, you mentioned earlier, I mean, there were thousands and thousands of people who died from that. And the FDA never pulled it off the market. It's my understanding that the manufacturer finally took it off because they couldn't afford the lawsuits any longer. Is that, are you familiar with that situation?
That's absolutely correct. Yes, the manufacturer pulled it off and they tried to get it back on briefly, but they realized that it was too much of a risk. There was too much liability involved with it. But yes, you're absolutely correct about the FDA, and that's one of the things that I try, one of the misinformation tactics that I try to clear up with people, and that is that, you know, the FDA is not there to protect us. They are literally considered, you know, the buds of the pharmaceutical industry, and many of the manufacturers, they have contacts within the FDA, and it's kind of like a revolving door. People that come out of the FDA are actually hired into the pharmaceutical industry because of their relationships and their contacts, so it's kind of like a good old boys network, you know?
Go ahead. I was just going to ask you, just brought something up. Have you seen the new video that's out, the documentary called Bought, B-O-U-G-H-T? They actually have some really good graphics in there that deal with, you know, the revolving door and the path between Big Pharma, Big Agra, and the U.S. government. I just had to throw that in. I recommend that to anybody who hasn't seen it to check it out. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes. Jeff Hayes is the producer of that documentary, and I was actually in the prelude to that, which was doctored. And then this was the sequel, which is Bought. And yes, they have some really good information, and I too highly recommend that documentary, as well as Doctored. That was another one that it really does a great job of profiling the problem and showing how much, you know, actually the FDA and pharma are in bed together. You know, this is a cooperative business. And most people are under the thing I was going to add previously is that most people are under the impression that the FDA does studies and they evaluate these products and then they approve them as being safe for the public to use. And that's actually not the case. The manufacturers are responsible for doing their own studies, and then they have to submit only two studies that show statistically significant improvement over placebo, not over other drugs that are currently on the market or older drugs, but drugs that are placebo inert, you know, sugar pills. And so they have to submit two studies, and those studies are generally done on cherry-picked populations of people. And by that I mean they don't use people that are, you know, really sick or have concomitant diseases or are taking several pharmaceuticals together. So as you know, that's really not indicative of the general population, because the general population does have multiple disease states. They're on several drugs. They've got, you know, all of these things going on. They take supplements. They do different things. So the trials are actually, you know, the people that are chosen to do the trials, they try to eliminate people who have serious side effect profiles, who are prone to have side effects to drugs. They don't include pregnant women. They don't include ethnic groups that are problematic, like Asians, for example, don't tend to metabolize drugs the same way that Caucasian populations do. And so there's really a skewed amount of information that's given to the FDA for them to evaluate in the first place. And then secondarily, if there are maybe 20 studies that show, for example, that a drug doesn't work or causes serious side effects, and two that show that it works properly and doesn't have a severe amount of side effects, the pharmaceutical company will choose the two that obviously have the best drug profile, and then they just sequester and don't, well, they have to submit the other studies, but the other studies are not even looked at, or they're not even considered in the review process. So it really is skewed towards the benefit of pharma and, you know, the economics of pharma.
Yeah, that's crazy. I was thinking while you were talking, there was the Wizard of Id once upon a time. They did a cartoon where the wizard runs into the king and says, we've got a new drug we're going to be selling here, and the kingdom is going to get a cut of all of them. And what's the new drug? And he said, well, we had something that was for high blood pressure, and the placebo worked better than the actual drug did, so we're going to sell the placebo. that's the kind of stuff that goes on these days. It's just crazy.
You know, that's a really good representation of the truth, though, because we've found that if you've studied or done any of the due diligence around the antidepressants, which of course was the first drug category that really caught my attention when I started recognizing that the antidepressant studies had shown that they were really not much more effective than placebo. So I was like, wow, this is really interesting. And then Dr. Irving Kirsch did a review on all a meta-analysis of all of the antidepressant studies that had been submitted a few years ago, and in fact, that's exactly what he found, that the antidepressants were really no more beneficial than the placebo, but yet you will talk to a number of individuals who will tell you that, you know, oh no, that they saved my life, and you know, I really got a great amount of healing through using antidepressants, and what I really try to inform people about without, you know, discrediting their information is that, yes, I understand that they probably did get a certain amount of, you know, healing from taking the drug, but in fact it was their own personal healing, innate healing system that mm-hmm. did the healing. It wasn't the drugs. It was their belief systems that
exactly.
they could
heal.
Exactly.
It was psychosomatic.
Exactly, that was psychosomatic. And not only that, if they were in a drug trial sometimes, I mean, those people get an immense amount of attention. They're monitored on a weekly mm-hmm. basis. And people who are depressed, that they respond to that, particularly
right.
children.
Yeah.
So that's really some of the information that you have to look at. When it's taken out of context, sometimes it can be, you know, presented as being very positive for the manufacturers, but you really have to look at all of the information and understand how these things are, how the clinical trials are conducted, how drugs are approved, and recognize that they really don't have to be any more efficacious than anything that's on the market. They just have to have a statistically significant benefit over placebo.
Man, whatever makes it easiest for them to get the drug on the street so they can make money from it. In other words,
exactly.
I'm surprised, you know, and basically it's the old, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, you know, here's an envelope to stick in your pocket when nobody's looking kind of thing. I got to think that there's a lot of that going on. I hear the story of, how aspartame was approved. And that just, you know, blows me away. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Oh, I actually wrote about that in my book because that was one of the things I uncovered in my research that I was like, oh, so Donald Rumsfeld used mm-hmm. to work for the pharmaceutical company, and
that's
then he came over into the government, and they actually went about changing the head of the FDA and got their own person put into the FDA to approve it, even though the foods industry had actually lobbied against it and the fact that it was unstable. And come to find out, this is a biowarfare weapon that was originally you know, created in a lab somewhere as a biowarfare agent instead of as a sweetener that's, yeah, been put in all of our food and in our beverage supplies. So, and this is a highly neurotoxic agent. And mm-hmm. I can attest to that because I used to live in Texas where we had huge problems with red ants. Mm-hmm. And if you just take one of those little aspartame packets of, you know, sweetener and you pour it on a red ant bed, they don't move their colonies like they normally do when you put some kind of andro or something like that on the colony. They literally all die right in the colony, and it just eats their little brains up.
Oh, man.
That's so... Well, now we know what to use aspartame for.
Yes, it does have some benefit, but don't be taking it yourself.
Yeah. Given any brand of chewing gum on the market, it's in all of them. And that's the thing is they have, it's spread throughout everything. I mean, it's next to impossible to get anything without aspartame in it. Although people are starting finally to wake up after what, 30 or 40 years of this stuff being around. It's amazing.
Yes, and they've renamed it. Did you know that? Now I can't off the top of my head because it's still early for me. Can't remember what they renamed it, but they're actually trying to sneak it into things by having renamed the product. So that's some due diligence that I think your audience should do on their own and find out what's the new name, since I'm not remembering off the top of my head what it is for aspartame.
The same thing with high fructose corn syrup. You know, everybody started going crazy about that, so now they just change it to corn syrup. So it's not.
That's the big controversy about labeling as well, is because they don't want us to know. They realize that there is an educated population of people that are waking up to, you know, all the disinformation campaigns taking place and the dangers that currently exist in our food supply, our water supply, everything that we consume. And so they're trying to keep us from being able to make those critically intelligent decisions for ourselves by keeping the labeling from happening.
Yeah, you would think that, you know, if there was any common sense in government, they would make it illegal for anybody who has skin in the game, so to speak, or an ulterior motive or a profit margin motive to be involved in any kind of a voting process. But if you look at every single place where they're doing like the GMO labeling laws and things like that, every single one of those things, the public opinion is 100% in favor of the labeling, and they are always when they're defeated, it's because of millions of dollars that are pumped in from Monsanto and so many of the other mm-hmm. companies that have, you know, profit motives behind it. And that should be totally illegal. They should not be able to put any kind of influence in on those kind of things. But, you know, again, they're putting money in the pockets of the legislators, so that kind of thing is never going to get passed either. And
right.
We need
and
to
that's,
shut
there's
it
not
out.
Any difference. There's not any difference in the pharmaceutical industry. And it, for example, the meeting that I went to, which was the psychopharmacology meeting, where they were reviewing the antidepressants, is that, I mean, almost exclusively every member of that subcommittee and the committee were affiliated in some way to a pharmaceutical company. They were either on their speaker programs or they were considered one of their key individuals. And they always, you know, they have to disclose these conflicts of interest, but it doesn't preclude them from participating,
that's
which
nuts.
Is, you know, is the weird thing. It's like, okay, wait a minute. We know that this guy made, you know, $2.5 million last year from drug companies in representing them, but we're going to let him sit here and decide whether or not this is a fair, balanced meeting and whether or not, you know, this drug should continue to be marketed to the general public. So, I mean, we just need to be aware that these conflicts do exist, and I just encourage people, quite frankly, to be very proactive about their own health and do their mm-hmm. own due diligence. And one of the things I recommend, if you don't mind me just saying so, is that when you're prescribed something, don't go immediately to the pharmacy and fill the script. Go mm-hmm. home, get on a search engine, and don't just enter the name of the drug or the product of the, you know, where you're going to pull up the manufacturer's label and advertising and all of that stuff. Put in the name of the drug, and then after that, put in side effects and controversy. Mm-hmm. And then after you've done a certain amount of research and you see what other people are saying, you know, obviously there's people out there that have blogs that you can discredit fairly easily, but you can also find good information from reliable resources that mm-hmm. pretty much profile the problems of all of these drug categories and what other people have experienced, and they're out there trying to warn others about it. And I think it behooves us to do that investigation before we fill our prescriptions, and particularly before we give these products to our children. Because, you know, we may have the right to put anything that we want to into our own bodies as adults, and I don't discourage people. You know, that's a personal preference. If you want to take drugs, if you want to drink alcohol, whatever you want to do, I believe that as long as you're not harming someone else, that's your body and you're allowed to do that. However, when we're talking about our kids who are dependent on us as their caretakers to get it right, we yep. have to do an extra amount of due diligence. We have to make sure that we're not being sold down the river by some corporation that is using our children as a commodity for profiteering purposes. And that's just as plainly as I can put it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that. You know, our children are not our property. They're our responsibility. And we need to make sure that they are, you know, getting the absolute best that we can provide for them. And unfortunately, too many people in this day and age are, I don't know if they're too lazy, they're just worn out from working six jobs to try and make ends meet or whatever. You know, the problem is they're just not doing the research that they need to do. They're taking somebody else's word for it who doesn't necessarily have their best interest at heart. And in many cases are, you know, protected from liability if something goes wrong. And that's another thing mm-hmm. that drives me, you know, especially the vaccine industry. I will never take another vaccine as long as I live. The last ones I got was when I was in the Marine Corps, and I still think that had something to do with my health issues that I came up with in the last few years. But, well, we are out of our time for the first half hour of this section. So, it's been great, and it's going to get better. So stick with us, folks, and we'll be back on the other side of this 3-minute break.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. tell your co-workers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, Deej.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday through Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled in favor of a Muslim woman in a religious discrimination case. We get the details from SRN's Greg Cluxton.
Justices on the High Court have sided with a Muslim woman who did not get hired after she showed up to a job interview wearing a headscarf. She was applying for work at clothing retailer Abercrombie & Fitch. The court said that employers generally have to accommodate job applicants and employees with religious needs if the employer at least has an idea that such accommodation is necessary. Greg Clugston, SRN News, Washington.
Dozens of farmers in the Sacramento San Joaquin River Delta are changing their business models to meet voluntary water conservation targets amid the relentless drought that's still going on in California. The state's Delta Water Master says roughly 120 farmers in the Delta had filed their water-saving plans ahead of a midnight deadline. He expects more plans to come in. This is SRN News. Some earthquakes off the coast of Oregon. It's not all that rare, according to the Geographic Association in Golden, Colorado. They say that as a result of that, nothing has been felt on land, and there's no threat of any kind of tsunami.
This is definitely a known seismic area, and we've definitely seen earthquakes in this area before.
That is geophysicist Amy Vaughn with the National U.S. Geological Survey in Golden, Colorado. Secretary of State Kerry tried to get back on his feet, but he'll undergo surgery today to deal with his broken leg that he suffered over the weekend. In the meantime, he will continue to contribute to international matters. State Department spokeswoman Marie Harf.
Secretary is committed to pursuing an aggressive recovery schedule. There are a range of possible recovery trajectories with an injury like this, and it's quite frankly premature to speculate on the specifics of what that recovery will look like.
And Marie Harf says that Kerry will continue to be fully engaged in the Iran nuclear talks as well. More details at srnnews.com.
Agent for Truth with Joe Bannister. Saturday on Truth Frequency Radio.
And it appears that we are back for our last 30-minute segment in today's edition of Red Pill Reports. I'm Jim Ram, sitting in for JD. And again, check out the redpillreports.com website. There's all kinds of great information there. You can get replays of the programs. You can see upcoming guests and all the news that we talk about. There's just tons of information there. Robert does a great job of keeping that site up and fresh and loaded with information. And I just encourage you to check it out. Also, check out my website, yourdiyhealth.com. That's yourdiyhealth.com. If you have any kind of chronic health issues, we can help you reverse those things without drugs or surgery just by using science-based, clinically verified medical nutrition. And today's guest is Gwen Olson, the author of the award-winning book, Confessions of an RX Drug Pusher. And Gwen, if it's okay with you, I'd like to open up the phones in case we've got anybody that would like to ask questions. Is that okay with you?
Oh, that's fine with me.
Okay. Anybody who's out there, if you got a question for Gwen, call in. It's 866-37-TRUTH, 866-378-7884. 866-378-7884. Feel free to call in, and I will try and keep an eye on that and at the chat room at the same time. But Gwen, what else have you, you know, the stuff that's going on in the pharmaceutical industry is one of the things that I've found in my training. Like I said, I'm a retired cop, but I have had more success in helping people reverse chronic health issues than any MD that I know, simply by using the right nutrition, stopping the bad foods, and starting the good stuff. And I'm curious, you said that you had gotten into the whole foods area and all that kind of thing. What kind of stuff have you been involved in?
Absolutely. In fact, I worked for two manufacturers of supplements for Nature's Way. At one point, I worked for them, and then I also worked for Gaia Herbs, mm-hmm. which, interestingly enough, I just have to add this little caveat, is when I was interviewing with Nature's Way, I was asked what my biggest concern was leaving the pharmaceutical industry to go into the natural foods industry. And I told them that I was informed by pharma that if we could, that, you know, because we were concerned about the business that was being lost to the natural foods industry, people taking supplements and vitamins. And we were told that not to worry about that, that if pharma couldn't beat them, they would buy them. And if they couldn't buy them, they'd put them out of business. So I was like, okay, so that's my biggest concern. And guess what happened? 2 months after I went to work for Nature's Way, they were purchased by a German pharmaceutical company.
It's good to hear you say that, because I have, I've talked to a lot of people, and quite honestly, and I'm not going to make any apologies, I'm a longevity distributor. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but they are literally the absolute best supplements on the market that I've ever seen. The results we get are unbelievable. And I've talked to a lot of people that it appears, and this is the first, you know, substantiation I've had of that, but I've suspected for quite some time that the vast majority of supplements that you find in stores are either, in one way or another, they're either owned or heavily influenced by Big Pharma, and they purposely produce a product that's substandard that isn't going to do any good, so it will force the person into the Big Pharma situation.
No, absolutely. Okay. And I tell people, you know, do not, I mean, I know that we all have, you know, our economic restrictions right now, because a lot of people are out of work and a lot of people don't have the resources to pay the top dollar for, or they don't believe they have the resources to pay the top dollar for the good supplements that they need to take. And so they're buying and sourcing things, you know, at Walmart and Target and places like that. And I'm not trying to give those people a bad name either, but you need to really look at the various, you know, producers of those vitamins and supplements. They A, may be owned by a pharmaceutical company, or B, sometimes they're just, you know, they're not even reputable companies themselves. This is a very largely unregulated industry, and so you have to be cautious, and buyers must beware of where they source their products. So what I try to educate people about is that most people are drinking, you know, coffee from Starbucks, or they're buying soda pop, or they're smoking, or they're doing something that they could afford to let go of, or they're buying processed foods instead of fresh foods. And believe me, I myself sometimes have to, you know, I balk at the prices that I see on organic things, but I still go ahead and I spend the money for those things. Right. And I may not be very fond of multi-level marketing organizations, but I found that they generally have the best products.
Yep.
And so you have to look at the assays of, you know, the various products that are being sold, and you can see that a lot of stuff that you're buying out in the stores is just crap. It's really not what it says that it is in the bottle. In fact, we used to call a lot of the supplements rectal rockets, because they don't even assimilate, and you can't, you know, they pass out in the toilet when you use it.
Exactly.
So you just have to be careful about where you source your things and do your own due diligence and use your intelligence. And there are some very highly reputable market MLM companies out there that people should take a look into and see what they have to offer.
They got a question in the chat room. Think Inside wants to know, is it true that THC can destroy cancer cells? I don't know if you're familiar with that. I've got something I'm going to say, but I'm going to let you go first.
Yes. Well, actually, it's the cannabinoids that it's not the tetrahydrocannabinol. It's the cannabinoids that the THC is actually the psychoactive component of marijuana. And the medicinal properties, to my understanding, come from the cannabinoids, and that would be you could actually eliminate the psychoactive properties and still get the medicinal benefit. I have stayed out of this particular controversy for a while. I even stayed out of the vaccine controversy for a while because I was trying to focus primarily on the psychotropic drugging and didn't want to get mixed up into those arguments. But, you know, I've done quite a bit of my own research, and I did find the patent that was owned by the federal government, actually, on marijuana. And so even though it is still classified as a Class 1 narcotic having no medicinal value whatsoever, the patent reads that it's very highly medicinal in its properties, and that that is one of its medicinal properties.
Yeah,
so that's a kind of a long answer to a short question.
Yeah, and there, you know, the bottom line is there are tons of things out there that will get rid of cancer cells. And again, another plug. A couple of years ago in 2013, the Clemson University studied two longevity products, the Beyond Tangy Tangerine and the Ultimate Classic. And they took it upon themselves. We didn't ask them to do it. But they were looking at two things, anti-inflammation and anti-cancer, and both products took down inflammation greatly and also reduced colon cancer cells to, you know, about 95% dead in vitro. So that's far safer way to do it, less, you know, something you can buy legally anywhere. At least for now, and it does a great job. And that's the thing. You know, there are lots of things out there. Anybody that is at all adept using a search engine can find tons of information. Again, you got to weed through it because some of it is could be questionable. But there's a lot of good information out there. And the thing that gets me is on the other side of things is the Journal of Clinical Oncology in 2004. Issued a report saying that for adult onset cancers, there's a 5-year survival rate, that chemotherapy was 97% ineffective with a plus or minus 3% margin of error. So that's got to make you wonder, you know, that basically says chemotherapy 100% doesn't work. And why would anybody keep using it? Because it makes billions of dollars for the industry. And if anybody anybody who actually survives from chemotherapy, it's not the chemo that did it. I honestly believe it's the sodium bicarbonate buffer solution that's used along with it to keep it from killing the patient. That alkalizes the body, and it's been proven to kill cancer cells. So the one thing you can do is do some study on your own and avoid big pharma and avoid AMA if you get cancer, because they are going to kill you. Many times you die from the cure as opposed to from the disease. So, again, another long answer for a short question.
Frequently you will die from the cure. Yeah. In fact, I called on oncology, and I can tell you that I questioned a number of the oncologists that I called on if they had, you know, been diagnosed with cancer or one of their family members was diagnosed with cancer, what treatment would they pursue? And they all, 100% of the ones that I surveyed said that they would not do chemotherapy.
Oh, no.
Because it just kills everything. It kills all of your cells, and in the body's ability to repair itself is phenomenal. But once you go in and you start killing everything, you know, particularly the gut fauna, which is really important, that's, you know, 80% of your immune system. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I truly believe there's so much disinformation out there. And just like you said, the big money makers are these drugs for hep C and for cancer, and these drugs are not going away anytime in the near future. And I even heard rumor, and I won't say what company that I was working for at the time, but one of the older reps that had been with the organization I was working for at the time told me that they had the cure to cancer. They knew about it, and it was locked up in a safe somewhere, and that they were waiting for all of the cancer drugs to go off patent before they would even approach, you know, even thinking about using it. And I tend to believe that. I tend to believe that that's exactly what's going on, because if they do find the cure to cancer, it's not going to, or if they have already, it's not going to be released anytime in the near future, because there's just way too much money involved in the treatment of it.
That's the truth. And Man, I it just drives me crazy when I look at all this stuff and I see the people. I've got a niece right now. She's 22 years old, was diagnosed with a glioma brain tumor about 2.5 years ago. And I knew from the second I heard that, I said, you've got a gallium deficiency. And that's proven. It was written up in the Lancet several years ago. It's without a doubt, all the tests show that if you have a glioma brain tumor, it's caused by a deficiency in the trace mineral gallium. And instead of looking at the information I gave her, she's gone through like 3 different brain surgeries and chemo and all that stuff. And even after all that, they're still saying you've got less than a year to live. And it's like, you know, some people are just so wrapped around that they believe that the guy with the white coat and the stethoscope around his neck is, you know, the god of medicine, when in fact they aren't. And people need to realize that there's a lot more information out there than what these guys have. The only thing they're trained in is drugs and surgery. And when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Exactly. And, you know, that was the part that probably surprised me the most when I set out trying to inform the public and trying to sound the alarm about these particular issues.
Right.
Was that there are so many people that we've been acculturated to hand over our power. And we've
exactly.
been told that we're not intelligent enough to make our own decisions or to think for ourselves or, you know, and that's what people do. And I, in fact, had an interaction with someone on Facebook last week that it kind of blew my socks off. I had another friend of mine who had asked me if I would help this person by explaining to him why he shouldn't have his 9-year-old daughter get Gardasil vaccine. And so I obliged with the mutual friend and contacted this person and gave them the information and told them, you know, you should understand that on every ad that you hear, they tell you to ask your doctor for a reason because you're supposed to hand your power over, but you have the ability to, you know, do your own research and to make these decisions on your own. Yes, you may not be adept at reading clinical studies, but you can read articles and you can read evaluations that other professionals have made of these sorts of things. And the gentleman came back and said to me, well, why should I not ask my doctor? He's the one who went to school to do all of this. He's the one who's supposed to be educated and intelligent about all this stuff. I don't have time to do it, so that's what he's there for. And, you know, if someone wants to allow people to lie to them and to profit off of them, there's really nothing that you can do about that.
That's exactly true. Yeah, and I honestly blame it. I think it's on a far greater scale that, you know, we have been purposely dumbed down through the public fool system and all the stuff over the last 100 years that's basically produced nothing more than we're worker bees and drones who are there to fund whatever great big, you know, thing out there wants to suck us dry, whether it's big pharma, the ag industry, or whatever the case might be, the government and their taxes. You know, all we are is the fodder for all of them to get wealthy. And the dumber we are, the less likely we are to question what's being done to us and more likely to allow it to be done without, you know, just roll, okay, you're the doctor, you know. And luckily, there are more and more people who are starting to sit up and take notice and realize what's being done, but it's a slow process. But hopefully shows like this and others out there will, you know, help considerably in that regard. The more people that hear this message, the more people are going to at least, you know, some are hearing this probably for the very first time. And you know, the thing is you have to take responsible for your own health, your own safety, your own well-being. Because the people out there that you think are doing it for you could care less about you. You know, that's the bottom
that's
line.
That's right. They're lining their pockets.
Exactly.
And if you don't believe me, I mean, you can Google up whistleblowers. That's the important thing to do, is recognize that there are people with a conscience that are speaking out, just like we touched on the vaccine issue earlier, and there was a CDC whistleblower that came forward last year in 2014. I believe his name was Thompson, if I'm not mistaken. And he was talking about the fact that they had actually omitted data from their published studies that showed that African American males, children under 36 months of age that received the MMR vaccine, had a 340% risk increase for autism. But they omitted that information when they published the study. Now, I think that is one of the most criminal things that I have ever heard of. But to date, no one has been called on the carpet. No one has been fined. No one has been, you know, made accountable for the withholding of that information. But if you were an African American parent, would you not think that that would be important information to know in order to make an informed decision for your child?
Oh, without a doubt. You know? Without a doubt.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And then they also don't, on the flip side of that, they don't publish the good information to let you make an informed decision like, okay, how many cases of measles were there actually in the U.S. in 2014?
Right.
Well, I did that research and come to find out it was just over 300. And when I did the math on it, the risk of contracting, and actually, let me back up, 97% of those 300 and some cases had been somewhere abroad in order to contract the measles.
Right.
So not only was it a rare thing that they got them, but it was also you had to apparently travel outside of the country in order to be, you know, exposed to them. And what happened was when you did the risk to that, it was like 0.00009% risk of contracting measles. And we know that, I mean, I had measles when I was growing up, and I'm not saying that it can't be a deadly disease, but most children don't die from measles if they contract the measles. So there's a very skewed presentation of, you know, what the risk is to the actual disease state versus what the actual risk is to the, you know, cure or the preventative measure that they're using. I think people just need to be more informed. They need to do, like we've said a couple of times already, their own research and stop handing their power over to other people. You're intelligent enough to think for yourself. If you'll turn off some of the mind-numbing TV stuff that you're being exposed to and, you know, if you start researching in alternative news sites and do just a little bit, you know, take a little bit more effort to get your information than just turning on CNN.
Yeah, that's why, you know, I ask people when they say they watch that stuff, I said, why do you think they call it programming?
Exactly.
You know, you are being programmed. They're giving you what they want you to know and believe and swallow. And, oh my goodness, it drives me crazy.
And why do they call it practicing medicine?
Yeah, why is it medical practice? Because
they
never get it right.
If they have all the answers, why do they practice? Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot to be said about the clues that are being dropped to us in, you know, the words that are used in these things.
Oh, I'll tell you, it's absolutely crazy. You know, the thing that gets me is, you know, the AMA hasn't been able to even cure heartburn. What makes you think they're going to come up with anything that can cure cancer? Or anything else, you know, and I got rid of, you know, my doctor told me it was incurable and I'd be on drugs forever. I got rid of it in less than 24 hours just by taking the right supplements.
My mother saved her own life, from cancer. She did do the chemotherapy, but she was simultaneously doing supplements and all of that, and they were quite amazed that she didn't lose her hair during the process because they were like, oh no, all of our patients lose their hair, and she still had a full head of, you know, healthy hair, and they were like, they thought she was just miraculous because she'd survived. And then at the end of the whole thing, she finally told her doctor that while that they were treating her with the chemo, and she only did one round of chemo, but that she was doing supplements and taking care of herself and eating raw foods and things of that nature.
And
so she was trying to combat, she was trying to combat the problems that they were creating for her with the drugs.
Yeah, more than likely she would have done far better and healed up even quicker had she not done the chemo at all.
And oh, absolutely.
Without a doubt.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah, but you know, she was
all the time.
She was still, like most people, they get you to succumb to their ideology because of all the fear-based thinking and propaganda that's disseminated, you know?
Happens all the time. That's how they killed Michael Landon. That's how they killed Neil Armstrong and Andy Rooney and Dick Clark. You know, they give you this sob story about, oh, you got this problem here and let us do the surgery real quick. And then they get, you know, sepsis from it or something and they're dead in 3 days. That happens every single time. Or not every time, but it did with these guys. And it only happens to have to happen once for it to really mess up your life. And
yeah, there aren't many Lance Armstrongs running around. That's for sure.
No.
that's an anomaly that it's for another time. That's another conspiracy show. Right now we'll just talk about things we know about.
Oh boy. But yeah, the, Yeah, this has been wonderful, and we've got like 5 minutes left, so I'm just gonna, you know, if there's anything else that you have that you want to cover that we haven't covered so far.
I would like to cover something just because a lot of people get my information because they're on some sort of psychotropic drug or their children are on psychotropic drugs. As I said, that was my area of expertise for a long time. And I would just like to warn everybody that there is a large amount of risk involved when you start taking any psychotropic drugs, when you titrate or when you try to adjust the dosage of any of those drugs, or when you try to discontinue the drugs. So there's quite a bit of risk that's involved in that particular drug category. So it's really imperative that people wean off of those drugs slowly and that they do so under medical supervision, because when people start finding out that how toxic the drugs are and that they don't work, often their first reaction is, well, I want to stop taking it. Well, you have to be very careful when you do that, because these are actually, they alter the brain function and structure. And so you have to do that very carefully and very, very slowly under medical supervision. Do not try to go it alone. And if you can't get your doctor to agree to help you, then go out and find an integrative care MD or a chiropractor, which they're very amenable and usually are working with a prescribing physician as well that they have a good relationship with. And then what some of the things that for people that are on like cocktails of drugs, never quit drugs simultaneously. You always want to eliminate one drug at a time. That way you can see what is doing what, because if you try to, you know, stop taking several things simultaneously, sometimes you'll not know where the decompensation is coming from or what's creating the issue that you're experiencing. And then I'd just like to give some of the ways that you can to repair yourself. And of course, we've talked about supplements, which I'm an advocate of supplements. I believe that, you know, our food sources do not contain the nutrition that they used to, the nutritional value. And of course, you want to avoid genetically modified organisms, and if you can, to source organic foods where possible, but also to source clean, pure water, which means free of fluoride. A lot of people do not understand how highly neurotoxic that fluoride is. And, you know, you need to increase your hydration to improve your kidney function and your elimination. But if you're pumping in more fluoride, that can also cause additional mental health issues. Also, just logical things like move your body. The body is an engine. We have to exercise the body. That also helps the body to detoxify through the sweat glands and through the skin. And then, again, just eat and source your foods as healthfully as possible. I know I've done a couple of raw foods retreats, and I'm not a big proponent of raw foods normally because, you know, I like my foods cooked, and and I do eat a small amount of meat. But I found that when I did those raw foods and exclusively did them for like 2 weeks at a time, the detoxification process that took place made me feel 20 years younger, made me look younger. I mean, it was just incredible the amount of benefit that you get when you eat the right foods. And so I highly encourage people to try that before they go taking pharmaceuticals. You know, try and exhaust all of the alternative treatments that you can find. And then once that you are off of all your drugs, do a whole body detox. Again, you can do that through infrared saunas. You can do it through nutritional supplements, exercise, raw foods, wheatgrass. There's just a number of different things that you can do to help the body detoxify and to get back into shape, because psychotropic drugs are designed to pass the blood-brain barrier. And so it takes a little bit of work to get them back through and eliminated from the body. But that's my little spiel on that, and I just wanted to let people be aware, because we do have a large number of children that are taking psychotropic drugs. And that's my final message and warning to parents, is that pharma has identified our children as being their most lucrative expansion market. In 2009, prescriptions grew at 4 times the rate of the general population in our children. And so you need to be aware that they are targeting our kids for that. And they're, you know, of course, now they're on diabetes drugs, they're on asthma drugs, they're on they're on the antipsychotic drugs, which is particularly problematic, and I encourage people to do research on that. Okay. But just be aware that our kids need to be taken care of. And please visit my website, GwenOlson.com.
GwenOlson.com. That's with an E at the end, GwenOlson.com. And we're all out of time. Gwen, thanks so much for being with us today. And make sure you check out RedPillReports.com. And our buddy Roger Sales and the Radio Ranch are coming up next. So stand by, and more Truth Frequency Radio is coming at you.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.